Second Thought is a 100% grassroots funded operation. If you'd like to help support the channel, get early access to every video, and join the Discord, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. Okay, here we go again. Draconian crackdowns on civil liberties part. A lot. There's a new bill that, at time of writing, has passed the U.S. House and is on the way to the Senate. Colloquially referred to as the anti-Semitism bill, you might be tempted to think, oh good, we're finally doing something about hate speech. Well, that is not the case. H.R. 6090, or the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, is once again a Trojan horse piece of legislation whose real intent is to make it illegal to protest the Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people. This is just the latest attempt by our corrupt and morally bankrupt ruling class to maintain the status quo. But that's not all it represents. Let's take a look at the bill. H.R. 6090 will be the first time a concrete definition of anti-Semitism is enshrined in U.S. law. Again, at first blush, that sounds like a good thing. That is, of course, the point. By making the bill nominally about protecting Jewish people, a noble cause, it makes it very hard to criticize the rest of the bill. Here are some specifics. The definition in question is the one agreed upon in 2016 by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which is a group of 35 member countries including the US and Israel. As a darkly funny side note, their homepage has, in big bold letters, "A World Without Genocide." Anyway, the definition they came up with is pretty comprehensive, and includes some common sense things like, quote, "Accusing Jewish people of secretly controlling the world's governments is anti-Semitic." Good, that's great. Statements like those are genuinely anti-Semitic, and the people making them are generally acting in bad faith. However, the definition also includes the following: denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming that the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor, and, quote, drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. Okay, this is where we run into a slight problem, because the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. It has always, since its inception, been explicitly intended as a Jewish ethnostate. The only way they can do that is by getting rid of the Palestinian people who have lived on the land for generations. It's no secret that Israel is a two-tiered society. There are roads and neighborhoods where Arabs cannot walk. There are invasive and humiliating checkpoints only for Arabs. The Israeli leadership routinely dehumanizes the Palestinian people, calling them human animals or children of darkness. Both direct quotes, by the way. None of this is secret knowledge. There have been articles and international legal reviews written for decades about Israel's apartheid policies. It's not like we don't have multiple precedents for these claims, either. All we have to do is flip through a book about Rhodesia or apartheid South Africa to see the very clear similarities. So including in federal legislation a ban on calling Israel what it is, a racist apartheid regime, is absurd. Then there's that other part. Not being allowed to compare Israel's actions to those of the Nazis. Again, this is kind of a problem, because no other regime on Earth shares as many similarities with Nazi Germany as Israel does. And that's not me being hyperbolic, it's objective fact. Show me any other country that sets up automated guns at checkpoints for one particular race, that forces over 2 million people into a concentration camp, refuses to let in food, water, medical supplies, or construction materials, that uses their concentration camp as a testing ground for new weapons. For example, Lavender, the AI system that marks Palestinian doctors, journalists, pretty much anyone they don't like for assassination, then waits for them to arrive home, then sends a drone to blow up their entire family. Show me a regime that speaks so openly about exterminating the subhumans, about building a glorious future for the chosen people. Show me a regime with such callous disregard for international law and basic human decency. Israel has destroyed every hospital in Gaza while the world watched. Lied about it. Blew up every university in Gaza. Lied about it. Has targeted medical and media personnel. Lied about it. And every day we uncover evidence of new mass graves and executions of the elderly, the disabled, and children. So, no. It's not unreasonable to point out that Israel is very clearly a fascist ethnostate that would make the Nazis blush. That's just called telling the truth, even if it's a truth that our elected officials have chosen to ignore. And you don't need to take my word on any of this. The horrific thing about this genocide is that it's been widely broadcast online. Despite all Israel's attempts to keep the evidence contained, if you want to see the photos and videos I've seen, you can do it right now. Just go to Twitter or Telegram and search Palestine. People like me, the people in your life who seem unreasonably angry about this, have seen things that no human should ever have to see. And we're not even there. Imagine what it feels like to be in Palestine right now. You have no food, no water, no shelter. You can't sleep because of the constant bombs. You're watching your children starve, and you can't do anything about it. And now that they've all been forced into the killing field of Rafah, there is nowhere to go. And Israel continues to dump bombs and white phosphorus, an internationally banned weapon that will burn through your bones, on the population they have deemed subhuman, all so they can secure their fascist ethnostate. No decent person can say Israel is any better than Nazi Germany. Okay, hopefully that's the last rant for this episode. Now that we've got those two points out of the way, we need to talk about what this bill means for the massive protest movement in the United States.
Free Palestine!
This is the University of Texas in Austin. Again, more protests.
The driving force behind the bill is the student protest happening on campuses across the country. What started at Columbia University as an outspoken demonstration against genocide has quickly spread to schools in every state in the country. As militarized police beat students demanding divestment from Israel, weapons manufacturers, and an end to the genocide, the protest grew into a full-fledged anti-imperialist movement to rival the Vietnam War protests. This student movement has become a cultural schism. On one side, we see young people of all races, creeds, and backgrounds uniting with principled university staff, human rights workers, journalists, historians, and normal, decent people to demand an end to the most obvious genocide in modern history. And rising up against them, we see violent police, frat boys, Zionist agitators, weapons manufacturers, corrupt university officials, and politicians bought by the pro-Israel lobby. There's good news and bad news in this mini-civil war. On the bright side, normal, decent people opposed to genocide vastly outnumber the ghouls supporting it. On the other hand, the minority, the increasingly fascist US government, and their unholy merger of state and corporate power are the ones with all the tools at their disposal to win. They know they can never win the hearts and minds of the people, so as they have many times before in this country's history, they weaponize the legal system to make the fight unwinnable for the rest of us. That's where this bill is coming from. If it's anti-Semitic to gather and say, what Israel is doing is wrong and amounts to apartheid, or Israel is committing genocide, then it'll be the easiest thing in the world to send in the police, round up the protesters, and throw them in jail. Make decency a crime, and suddenly we're all criminals. We don't have a say in the matter. The only people who do are the ones committing the genocide, funding the genocide, and building weapons for the genocide. That doesn't sound like a legitimate government to me. But something else that's important to note is that the legal system is not a moral system. Legal does not mean right. Illegal does not mean wrong. Slavery was legal. Segregation was legal. What Rosa Parks did, refusing to give up her seat for a white man, was illegal. Was she wrong? No. The law was wrong. The only thing this new bill will do if it becomes law, which it probably will be to justify mass arrests and fascist crackdowns on protests against this deeply illegitimate regime. Fascism isn't always goons marching with American flags. In fact, that's the least threatening form of fascism. The real threat is when neoliberal politicians, and that includes both Republicans and Democrats, feel threatened by a rising tide of class consciousness and turn their imperialist tendencies inward. This has been an ongoing process for a long time, but it's really begun to accelerate as the US position as the global hegemon continues to slip. So when this bill becomes law, and the next one, and the next one, and more expressions of discontent and righteous anger become illegal, remember that the morality of those protests hasn't changed. Speaking out against genocide is still the morally correct thing to do, no matter how hard the suits and talking heads try to spin it. I don't know about you, but I can't think of a single instance in history where crushing dissent to make it easier to fund a genocide has been the right thing to do. That's usually a pretty good indicator that the people doing it are the bad guys. The United States, Israel, all the US's little vassal states in Western Europe, they're the bad guys. The people on the receiving end of the occupation and apartheid and genocide, they're the good guys. Heck, you don't even have to think they're the good guys. They're just the guys. People trying to live on their ancestral land in homes their families have lived in for generations and resisting their execution by an occupying force. And here we get to an important piece of psychology for all of us in the West. Resistance. What is it? How is it portrayed in the media, in popular culture?
It's the resistance.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting, because in every piece of media where there's an empire, or a bigger army, or an occupying force, and then a resistance, who are the good guys? The resistance. And yet, in real life, when actual people oppose the empire, whether it's the British, French, or US empire, those same people, the resistance, are labeled terrorists. They're the bad guys. Why is it that we can identify with brave resistance fighters in movies, but not in real life? Even in Star Wars, one of the most famous series of all time, we're able to side with the rebels against a sci-fi depiction of our home country.
The irony of that one is, in both of those, the little guys won.
Right.
And the big, highly technical empire...
The English Empire, right?
The English Empire, the American Empire, lost.
Yeah.
That was the whole point.
Is it just because it's fantasy? The good guys are presented as the good guys? The good guys look and sound like us? Yeah, that's probably a big part of it. Another part of it is good old white supremacy and American exceptionalism. For the entire existence of the United States and the entire colonial period of the Western empires, white people would show up in some exotic land, butcher and subjugate the people, and would somehow convince everyone back home that anyone who resisted these invaders were terrorists. It's the oldest trick in the imperialist book. It is exactly the same with Israel and Palestine. A Western civilizing force can do unspeakable evil, but as long as the people they're murdering are brown or don't conform to whatever arbitrary Western sensibilities of the time, it is all perfectly justified. But it's not justified. It can never be justified. The people being exterminated by Western imperialism have every right to resist that extermination by whatever means they deem appropriate. It is their land, their life, their self-determination. We can either stand with the resistance against imperialism wherever it exists in the world, or we can side with fascism. And you know what? Plenty of our friends and family will side with fascism and not even know it. Here's an example.
Okay, the amount of annoying videos I see on a daily basis, the pro-Palestine people are actually worse than the BLM people were, which I didn't even know that was possible. Whatever you think you're doing for your cause, you're hurting it a million times more. And if you're so fond of a place, I suggest you leave America and you go there and you fight.
Here is a woman who's probably not outspokenly racist. She's probably not out beating up students. She's just so aggrieved that she can't get her coffee that she's supporting a genocide. That's how cultural fascism works. We need to accept the fact that a whole lot of Americans and Western Europeans are going to applaud these crackdowns on civil liberties. But these people aren't the main problem, as we saw earlier. The capitalist system and those in power are the problem. But why are they doing it? They must know we all hate them, right? Of course they do. They just don't care. They have the power, we don't. Supposedly. This isn't something they're even really invested in. You know Joe Biden is sitting in the Oval Office thinking, come on, man, this genocide's been going on for 80 years. Why'd it have to blow up during my term? This is the mindset of every single US president. They do not care about the people of Palestine or the Israeli occupiers. They care about maintaining an unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Israel is an incredibly valuable asset. A wild card willing to threaten nuclear war to keep the region destabilized is exactly what the US wants. We can station troops there. The IDF can and does train our cops. And in exchange, Israel dumps huge sums of money to the tune of some $100 million this cycle into funding politicians from both parties. It comes down to money and the maintenance of empire. That's the government side of things. Then there's the corporate side. Whereas the government wants to ensure the US remains dominant geopolitically, corporations want to make sure the US remains dominant economically. And it's rarely some evil businessman smoking a cigar plotting to bonk some rabble-rousers, although that does happen. It's usually just people who literally cannot think beyond the bottom line. They are so conditioned by capitalism that their entire worldview is dollars and cents. Here's one especially funny example from the Washington Post, talking about the student protesters. Quote, "They could become investors in the US defense contractors or other companies they want to influence. That would allow them to become activist investors and push for the changes they want to see from the inside as investors." Right, don't fight to break the system. Join the hive mind. It'll work, I promise. It doesn't work in government, and it doesn't work in the corporate world. The people who try it get consumed by the machine. Or they keep their principles, and they end up like the people in those Boeing headlines. Anyway, we tend to think of these two worlds, government and business, as separate. But under our terminal stage of capitalism, they're really not. The two are so intertwined that separating them is impossible. Let me give you an example. Here's the CEO of Palantir.
What I think is an often overlooked part of this battle is we kind of just think these things that are happening across college campuses especially are like a sideshow. No, they are the show. Because if we lose the intellectual debate, you will not be able to deploy any army in the West ever.
If you need a refresher, Palantir was founded by the notorious Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel, and they worked with the NSA to create the most comprehensive digital espionage apparatus ever conceived. Palantir was co-created with American spies. One of its earliest investors was the CIA, and the company will not disclose any of its contracts with the government, despite making over $1 billion from these clandestine partnerships. They were also heavily invested in politicians who were particularly gung-ho about the TikTok ban, which, as we all know, thanks to these politicians literally saying as much, was not about data security, but rather preventing the spread of pro-Palestine content. The United States government, the military-industrial complex, corporate spy networks, and a literal foreign government meddling in US affairs, all working together to crush whatever freedoms we have left. It's not a secret evil cabal. It is the logic of imperialism, the logic of capitalism, and the logic of fascism. We live in a fascist regime. So when you see one small piece of legislation chipping away at your rights, realize that it's not happening in a vacuum. Everything is connected. Today we lose our right to protest a genocide, tomorrow we lose our right to freedom of movement, and soon enough, we're avoiding eye contact with the jackbooted thugs posted in our favorite coffee shops and pretending like everything is normal. That's why this bill is so scary. It's a teaser for what's to come. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that this channel is entirely grassroots funded. Since sponsors don't want to touch videos like these, we have to rely on the generous support of viewers like you. If you'd like to help keep this channel afloat and get some great perks while you're at it, consider becoming a patron on Patreon. All patrons, regardless of pledge amount, get early access to every video, plus access to our patrons-only Discord server. We just made a major update to the Discord, with a revamped leveling system and monthly Discord Nitro giveaways to active members. We've also got a bunch of other cool stuff like a book club, live Q&As with me every month, and a dedicated educator role for users ready to answer any questions you have about socialism. We've built a thriving community, and we'd love for you to be part of it. So if you'd like to join the Discord, get early access to every video, and help support genuinely principled socialist content, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. If you enjoyed this video, leave us a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out our other content by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.